Welcome to Smart Habits for Translators, a podcast for translators by translators, bringing you simple strategies to build better habits. In each episode, we will focus on specific habits for translators in various stages of their careers. If you're a translator who enjoys learning about habits to improve your business and lifestyle, then this is the podcast for you. We're your hosts, Madalena Sanchez-Ampalo
and Veronica De Michelis. Like you, we are professional freelance translators trying to balance the challenges that come with building a career and maintaining clarity and boundaries between work and personal life. We hope you'll join us in this conversation about smart habits and discover some simple strategies you can apply today to help you build your career and achieve the lifestyle you desire. Welcome to Smart Habits for Translators. This is episode 2, and today we're going to be talking about a topic that most of us hate to talk about, but that we all struggle with at some point in our lives and careers. We have been talking to a lot of colleagues over the years, and we've seen time and time again that the most successful translators we know, and many newbies as well, have something in common. We are a bit hard on ourselves. We are self-proclaimed perfectionists. But having this perfectionist attitude can also mean that we tend to hold ourselves back when we think we don't have all of our ducks yet in a row, or we don't quite know all the answers.
Yeah, so we hear this from people no matter what stage of their career they're in. And I think that it's very common to feel this way and to be hard on ourselves and to focus on the one thing that maybe we haven't quite achieved yet, or that we would like to you know, point where we would like to get in our careers, but we aren't quite, we don't maybe even know quite how to get there, or maybe what other people will think if we do. And so that's something that we find is very common, not only in our profession, but in general.
Yeah, I agree. And I see this every day myself, both in my personal life and in my professional activities, you know, and I also volunteer professionally. And I have this thoughts in my head all the time. And everyone I know has moments when they think that they just don't have it. You know, people I know who are wondering if they can really write an article about something. And like when I was first offered a teaching position at our local college, I was thinking, who am I to teach a class on this topic? Or who am I to, you know, share my experience in, for example, creating a resume and share it with my colleagues or students in a class, and a person I know who's writing a book and wondering, what if nobody buys it? I have heard these and other questions from some of the people that I think are, you know, maybe some of the smartest and most talented people I know, and I can certainly relate. And I don't think there's anybody who can't, who hasn't heard these voices in their head and let them get to you. So this is something we all struggle with, and it can be especially hard for us because we feel that our job is to communicate ideas in another language and do it perfectly and eloquently and effortlessly. So we can just be very hard on ourselves.
Yeah, I think that's true. And it's funny because this is something people don't like to talk about, but it's something that we should all just admit to ourselves and to everybody that we all feel this way at some point. You know, it's like you were saying about the person who said, well, who am I to teach a class on this topic, or who am I to write an article on that, or will anybody accept, or, you know, if like in the case of the book, will they buy this book that I put out there, that I put all this creative time into? And something that I heard somebody say once, and it's so true, is that we don't realize how much other people are not worried about what we're doing.
Yes.
They're not really paying that much attention. And when you do something that, you know, you might feel is maybe out of your comfort zone, or you're unsure about, or even it doesn't even have to be some special thing. It could be just in your everyday work. I think that people don't take into account that it's more about this own conversation they're having in their head than it is about what others perceive of them.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I remember, I think I posted on Twitter about it. I took a yoga class like a week ago, and the yoga teacher said it in the class, and probably because I was thinking about this topic, that I was like tuned into this, and I heard her say it, and it really resonated with me. And so she said, the only person in this room who is critical of you or criticizing you is yourself. And I was like, yes, this is, you know, a perfect quote for, as it really relates to imposter syndrome.
Yes.
Yeah. So of course, you know, we're talking about imposter syndrome, this feeling of being a fraud, of not being good enough, not being smart enough. When you feel that you have nothing significant to say on a certain subject, that there are other people who are better at this, and that there are a million other articles or books or blog posts written on the subject and so many great experts. So who are you to say something about this?
Yes, exactly. I had somebody in one of my online courses once bring this up to me recently. She asked me, we were talking about copywriting, and she wanted to write this blog post with her own perspective and twist on it, and it was very good. And then, you know, she asked me to look it over for her, and I did. And then she said, but won't people read this and wonder, like, who is she to say this or to make this claim? And she wasn't even actually making any claims, but simply just writing a piece of content that she thought might be useful to people. And I was so stunned to actually get that reaction from her as to why would she feel that way? Why would she wonder that other people would think, like, who is she to do that? But the more that I talk to other translators, and it's not that this is just a something that translators deal with. It's not, but I do talk to a lot of translators. Yeah. So the more I talk to them, the more I keep hearing this come up. And of course, it isn't just translators, but I think we have to check ourselves sometimes and think we do have other skills and capacities beyond simply translating. And we do have the ability to, you know, grow in certain areas without worrying so much about what others think. But, you know, that's one of those things, it's easier said than done.
Yeah, you're so right. And we all have our unique life experiences and perspectives and, you know, background that just makes our point of view or our opinion on something very valuable, because nobody else has that.
Right.
Yeah. And it's, as you said, it's not just us, you know, everyone feels this way. Doesn't matter which profession or what kind of knowledge they have or what career they have. And when we were getting ready for recording this episode, I looked into some famous personas who suffered from imposter syndrome. And one that stood out, I actually didn't know about, is Albert Einstein. He described himself as an involuntary swindler. And that really shocked me, because that's, you know, one of the most brilliant people in history. But yeah, he thought that he was an imposter. I remember feeling this way in my corporate career before I became a freelance translator, where people told me I had all the reason to be proud of my accomplishments. You know, I had 2 master's degrees, I fluently spoke 4 languages and had a lot of professional achievements, but I still had this feeling, no matter how many people told me that what I did was great, I felt that they are wrong. And one day they will wake up and realize that I'm a fraud. And one time that really stands out in my memory is when I had to organize a huge event for the company where I worked. It was a big celebration of the company's 100th anniversary. And we were inviting over 1,000 distinguished guests from different countries, lots of officials from other companies, from the government, and so on. And so I worked really hard on organizing this event. I had a lot of help, but I was in charge. And I was really nervous and just anxious about how it would go. And I was really exhausted and so stressed that after the event was over, I just collapsed and I was sick for a week. But the event was a success, and everyone was happy about how it went. But I kept thinking, I'm not good enough to do this, and someone else could do it better, and I could come up with like a list of a dozen people who would do this better than me.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's part of imposter syndrome that no one really thinks about too, is that all that build up ahead of time before you accomplish something, or, you know, you may not accomplish it because you're so worried that you won't. Sometimes they say that if you're thinking for, you know, all this time that you're just not going to be able to do it, then maybe you won't do it, you know, but that build up to accomplishing something you feel you're unsure about can be really exhausting. If you do achieve it, you realize, well, it wasn't as difficult as I made it out to be. Well, maybe in this case of an event like that, maybe it was. But, you know, I think we make these things bigger in our heads, and then it can cause us to become physically sick over it. And that's, you know, that can really play a number on your health if this is something that you deal with on a regular basis.
Yeah, absolutely. And it doesn't really matter how big or small of a task or a thing that we're, you know, obsessing about is. Of course, when you run your own small business, the stakes are higher, and you may feel that a lot of things are at stake, and that's why you shouldn't be doing whatever you're afraid of or you doubt yourself about. But this feeling can be crushing even by itself. But what's worse is that it has a ripple effect. You start to get low self-esteem, you procrastinate, you know, you sabotage yourself and so on.
Yeah, that's true. This is a really good point. I can relate to this with the procrastination and the self-sabotage bit. It's funny too, because a lot of people will tell me like, I don't know how you do all these things and this and that. And I'm sure you hear the same thing.
Yeah.
And you think about the fact that there is that thing on your list you've been procrastinating about forever. Or when I'm worried about something in my business, I'll put it off for a while so I don't have to handle it right away. I'll procrastinate until I absolutely can't put it off any longer. And then it gets to the point where I've built up so much, I guess procrastination around the whole thing, that it might not work out. I could be sabotaging myself and just having put it off for so long that then I feel unprepared. So I heard something the other day, which I think was on a podcast, and the person said, procrastination is really a fear of failure. And it's interesting. There's been a lot of things written lately on procrastination. I don't know which side of the fence I fall on, but I thought this was a interesting way to look at it. Procrastination being a fear of failure. And for some things, I think that's true. It can also be a fear of success. So what will it mean if I achieve this thing? Or what is it going to mean if I actually get what I want in this situation, whether it's for work or, you know, in your personal life, if a goal of some kind, or, you know, will others see me as being too successful or as not really knowing what I'm doing? Or, you know, what will happen if I do succeed? Then will I have all this responsibility on me or all this expectation from maybe other people in the future to keep performing at that level? So there are a lot of things that go into this for different people or different situations even. And the easier route is simply to not go for that thing that you want to accomplish or not to achieve something bigger. And that can also be, I think, a form of self-sabotage.
Absolutely. Yeah, I definitely have some experience with that as well. and you know, I feel so happy is maybe a wrong word, but I like it when people share with me that they suffer from imposter syndrome as well. And the more I talk about it myself, the more I feel like I just tune into this more, and I hear people saying it, maybe not explicitly, but saying things that show that they also doubt themselves and they are scared of something, you know? And then just, I feel like the more you talk about it, the more you notice it as well, and then you're able to maybe support people or help them, and that by doing that, you're also helping yourself. And I think it's so important because it's also a reminder that it's completely normal and it's not just you. And there's so many great and inspiring and motivating people around us that feel the same way. And it just helps you realize that this feeling is not the end of the world and you can get over it and move forward.
Yeah, I agree. I do. I think it's something people don't talk about enough. And it's one of those things that people they'll let it come out when it's like in the middle of a conversation or something like that. Like they won't just offer up this type of perspective on the fact that everybody does suffer from imposter syndrome at some point in their life, career, personal, whatever it is. I have a good example of this, actually. It just occurred to me that it's 2019 now, so probably about 7 years ago or so, I was in charge of putting together this huge event for women in, business and nonprofit in Columbus, Ohio. We lived in Columbus at the time. And it was a calendar event as well. So there was a calendar that was put out at the event for the coming year. And so only 12 women were chosen. And it was very competitive to be chosen for this. And it was a very prestigious award. And we did these interviews before we actually had the evening event where they were, you know, celebrated and everything, and the calendar was put out. And it was just to celebrate women doing amazing things, right? But like really high level. These women were, you know, like executive directors of nonprofits, or, you know, CEOs of these companies they had built up from nothing that were now, you know, multi-million dollar businesses, things like that. And the question came up to all of them that was, what is the one thing that you think has maybe held you back in some way in your career, or that has slowed you down from maybe getting to where you wanted to go sooner or faster? And every single person, and this is the crazy thing, I think every one of them just said myself.
Wow.
Everyone. And every time I heard it from another person, and they didn't know each other's answers at all, I just thought, wow, that's so fascinating. You know, this person who's achieved so much is sitting here telling me that what has held her back from maybe getting to where she is now, it took her longer, she thinks, or whatever, because it was her own self holding her back. Wow. So I think we should be talking about it more. Yeah. If anyone denies ever feeling like an imposter in some way, then I think they're lying to themselves.
Yeah, that's a problem.
Right? It's natural not to feel good enough at times. But the key, I think, is to accept the feeling of not feeling good enough, but not let it decide for us. Mm-hmm. We have to push past that feeling, maybe accept it, say, okay, this is how I'm feeling right now. What can I do to move past this? And then, you know, move forward to accomplish the bigger thing that we're going for.
Yeah. I agree. Acceptance and discussion of this is the key, is the first step. And then, one way of starting to, move forward is, I feel like you can't really move forward before you figure out why you feel this way, because that's part of the problem that's holding you back. And one reason could be social or cultural reasons. I got reminded of that by a book that I recently read, and I shared it in our previous episode, the book called Brave Not Perfect. It reminded me that, you know, some cultures or society raises us a certain way, and that could also be the reason why you doubt yourself and you're not maybe brave enough to do certain things. Like the culture in which I grew up encourages girls to be sweet, kind, caring, quiet, and nice, all nice things, but also things that can program you to not be brave and feel that you're not unique and not special. And I have worked really hard to overcome this programming and still do.
Yeah, that's true. And I think I like that word programming. It's like a cultural programming, but it's not just, you know, in your culture, it's in many cultures. And mm-hmm. I am picking up on this more and more as I work with more translators, you know, around the world. And many of them will come to me and say, I'm not confident in selling my services or marketing myself, or, you know, because that's a lot of the stuff that I do on, you know, on the side of my translation business. I teach on those topics, and they come to me and they say, you know, oh, I wish I could write copy like that about myself, or I wish that I could, you know, feel comfortable marketing myself to clients. And I don't think that nobody's born knowing how to do these things, right? Mm-hmm. Nobody's born saying, oh, I just want to be a marketer. I just want to sell myself. That's not how it works. But you have to come to a point where you accept this about yourself, that it is uncomfortable, and still move past it. Mm-hmm. Be able to say, okay, well, if I'm uncomfortable doing this, maybe there's another way to do this that I will feel comfortable and still reach my goal of, you know, maybe just marketing my business on a regular basis, you know, something like that. So anytime you put yourself out there in any way, there's that feeling of vulnerability, right? I've met, like I said, so many accomplished translators, and even through the online courses that I'm teaching with them, they're proud of their accomplishments, but they don't want to share it with other people. It's very interesting. So they struggle, for example, to write an about page that shows how amazing they are. And they feel like if they can't just say it a certain way, that sort of makes it less. They feel like they're boasting when they're not boasting. Mm-hmm. That way, right?
Yeah.
So they will hang on to this copy and not actually publish their website because they think this isn't perfect yet. And I just often respond to them and tell them, if you don't tell your potential clients that you're an expert at what you do, how are they going to know? Who's going to tell them for you? Yeah. You know, if you think about it that way. So I should also add, though, that other people aren't just thinking about us, like I said earlier, as much as we think that they are. Mm-hmm. So when it comes to imposter syndrome, the only one that we tend to be fooling is ourselves. Do you think that that's true?
Yes, yes, absolutely. Yeah. And as you said, you know, we can't expect other people to come out and say how fabulous we are, how amazing we are. That's our job. I mean, you can always share some testimonials or reviews, but these people have to find you somehow first.
Right.
Yeah. And we have to be our own like advocate. And you know, as a freelancer, you really have so many hats that you're wearing. And that, you know, people would normally work with you in a team in an office setting, or like if you have a corporate job, you would have like all these different people working as a team. But as a freelancer, that's all you. That's all on you. So it's really like the first responsibility you have is being able to clearly state what you do for your clients and who you are. And if you can, that, you know, it's really hard to grow your business with
right
basis.
Yeah. And you can do it in a humble way. You don't have to be, you know, like the salesperson that, you know, everybody wants to like run the other way when they're coming. It's not like that. You know, you can really talk well about your services. And it's sort of like what you were just saying about in a corporate setting, even if you work on a team, even if you don't, you have a review at some point in your career, you know, in the year, for example, or quarterly, or whatever the case is, and you do have to mention the things you've accomplished.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that that's something like that we all need to be really paying attention to and not be afraid to say, yeah, I accomplished this. And, you know, maybe I don't want to put it on a, you know, billboard, but at the same time, I do need to tell people how good it would be for them to work with me. And that helps me to grow my business.
Yeah. Yeah. And you're so right. You know, when I worked in corporate, in a corporate setting, we had this review, and I had a habit of writing things down, you know, things I have accomplished or whatever things I have completed and things people said about my work. It was just a habit to write it down because I had to share it in my review. But as a freelancer, I don't always remember to do it.
Yeah.
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 So do you think that many of us feel this way because we think that we lack knowledge or experience? Or is it because we are just used to, you know, as translators and interpreters, we're used to being invisible, being behind the scenes?
That's interesting. I do think that that's part of it. So as translators, we often think we need to have all the information before we can move forward or we take it seriously about something, right?
Mm-hmm.
I often hear people say, I have to go get a degree in this in order for people to, you know, hire me. And I have to go, you know, get like all of these certificates before I can start. And that's not necessarily always true. You can start with a good bit of experience, but if you don't get the experience, then, you know, you have to build on those things. So, I do think that that's true. And I think that the fact that we do work most of the time behind our computers actually feeds in more to that idea of us being sort of invisible.
Mm-hmm.
But we have to work against that. We have to, you know, overcome that feeling and be able to move forward with the information we have and continue to, you know, learn along the way and improve along the way. So it can be really crippling and stop us from achieving what we're capable of if we're just waiting around until we have all the information or until we think we have something just perfect.
Mm-hmm. Yes, absolutely. Yeah, no one has all the answers and all the experience. You know, people have different experience and different views on different topics. But we just need to learn to accept that it's okay not to know something. It's okay to not know something. But what is not okay is just not admitting to yourself that you don't know something, or not being willing to try and figure it out, or not being willing to learn from others.
Right. Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, so here's a good strategy or a good habit we'd like to share with you. If you're facing a task and imposter syndrome rears its ugly head, put together a list. What will happen if you drop the idea or task and do nothing? And what will happen if you power through and get it done? And then look at these two lists and think, how will that make you feel? If you do nothing, will you feel regret? If you power through and complete the task, how are you going to feel then?
Interesting. Yeah, I like this this habit and doing this on a regular basis, or when an opportunity comes up, you know, kind of making it a habit to decide, you know, oh, I'm starting to feel like I'm not good enough to do this, and actually taking action to try to look at this from the perspective of maybe a little bit of logic with two lists. I like that. Mm-hmm. For me, I feel like when something comes up, an opportunity that I'm not expecting, like maybe one that I haven't come up with on my own, that's the thing, you know, you think, well, should I do this? Because later on I'll regret that I didn't do it. Mm-hmm. Sometimes that helps you to decide. And sometimes that's not really going to help you get the answer, you know, whether you will regret it or not, just kind of depends on what it is. But I heard this concept before, and it has stayed with me ever since. And the person said something like, which discomfort do you prefer? The discomfort of growth or the discomfort of staying the same and not trying?
Yes, yes. I've heard something similar too. Like, are you going to regret not taking this opportunity? And there are so many things, and you mentioned, you know, some decision you have to make that maybe you didn't come up with on your own because someone suggested or offered it to you. And when I'm debating whether I should do something or if I'm having trouble making a decision, I try to remind myself of that question. Like, am I going to regret not doing this? And that usually helps me find an answer.
Right, exactly.
So another strategy or another habit we'd like to leave with you is to be more open and talk about imposter syndrome and talk to the people you know and with whom you feel a connection, whether it's a personal or professional one. And it's a good habit to be more brave and honest about it. And the more you talk to people about it, the more they open up. And this way you can reach out to each other and discuss and lift each other up and, you know, help each other overcome this feeling. I feel that more people would talk about it and support each other if we all make an effort to pay it forward. And, you know, even such a simple thing as complimenting someone you know on something they did or something they do also helps, because what goes around comes around. And, you know, one day you may need a little pick-me-up and someone will return the favor and compliment you. And I'm sure that each of us can come up with many names in our professional community, people that do something good for our profession or did something nice to us. And reaching out and thanking them is so easy, but that could be something they really need at the moment.
That's a good point. That's a very good point. Yeah. I think that a lot of times we appreciate some of the things that our colleagues do, but we don't actually tell them. Mm-hmm. And I think that that's really important. And not just on the topic of imposter syndrome, but just in general, you know, when somebody's working really hard, to recognize that. And not to think also on the flip side of that, not to think that people don't recognize what you're doing too, because probably they do. But they're also probably not thinking, well, you just can't accomplish this thing. You know, they're not doing that, but they do probably appreciate you and they may not say it. So that's another thing to remember. But also when somebody does pay you a compliment in an email, file that message somewhere, put it away to read on a rainy day, you know, as they say. So when you need to read something positive or you need a recharge of some kind, I have a folder in my email that I just have named. It's called Kind Words. So I haven't really gone back to look at it, but I know that it's there. I think that that's part of it too. When I do get that message that somebody sends me, that I'm like, well, that was just a really nice message about something that they appreciated or whatever, you know, I'll put it there. And even though I don't go back and read them, maybe it's that moment where I send it to that folder that I think is the key. It's that feeling of like, it's kind of like when you receive a gift. Mm-hmm. It doesn't matter what the object is, right? It doesn't matter what you're given. It's actually the thought, the fact that they took time to let you know that they appreciated something. So I think you're right. I think that paying it forward is a good habit to have.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's so important to save these compliments or these messages. I just love this tip. It reminds me of one of my former bosses. Again, when I worked in the corporate setting, she was very supportive, and I think she noticed that at times I doubted myself, and she gave me some advice. And I recently heard Marie Forleo's podcast episode where she gives the same advice. So my boss said, when people praise your work, I want you to write it down, you know, whether it's in a phone conversation or in an email, or you just, you know, they told it to you in person, write it down. And when we have our mid-year review, or when you doubt yourself, or when someone questions your expertise, I want you to read it out loud and notice how it makes you feel. And it felt so silly and weird when she suggested it, but she really insisted on it. And she kept asking me, like, randomly throughout the day, she'd be like, did you write something down today? Did someone send you an email? Or if she was copied on an email with some praise, she would ask me, did you write this down? So, yes. So it made me follow her advice, and it proved to be so helpful. Not only when we were discussing my performance, I had, you know, real life examples of what I did and how it helped someone, or, you know, people's compliments or comments on my work, but also just how it, like, I really started noticing how it made me feel, and that I doubted myself less. And I think it's also such a good reminder of the importance of surrounding yourself with positive people who give you advice like this, or people who lift you up and not bring you down all the time. And this goes for people you communicate with in real life and people you follow on social media.
Yes, I completely agree with that. There are a lot of successful people who say that they do their best to create circles of friends and colleagues who've achieved more than they have in the area where they want to improve. I've heard this referred to recently as the rule of proximity or the proximity principle, which I think is a great tip. And it's, I guess you could think of it as a habit as well. If you try to do this on a regular basis in something that you want to become better at, try to make friends in that area that are already successful, and, you know, don't stick around the people who are constantly complaining about, you know, this doesn't work and this isn't good enough, you know, and bringing you down. So essentially, when you want to do or achieve something, you surround yourself with the people who are already doing that thing or who have achieved what you want to achieve. And of course, this may not always be possible, like to meet with these people in person, right? But some of our best mentors are people we don't even really know in real life. Mm-hmm. It could be somebody that you follow, like you said, on social media, or it could be, you know, people that, you know, I know there are people in our organization, the American Translators Association, that we only see each other like once a year, but we are in contact the whole year. And I feel like it's sort of a circle of professional friends, you know, for example, who are, they're successful people in their field. They're nice people. And when you're working on something and they see that, they are very, you know, encouraging and congratulatory, and they will lift you up in that way. And you, I don't know that it's that hard to find those people. It can be, I guess, in certain areas, certain maybe parts of your life that you're trying to achieve something. But even if you're not, it's just a good habit to make circles or networks of friends and colleagues who are successful people, because nobody will ever say, oh, I don't know why this person's trying to achieve this thing. You know, there's no way they're going to be able to do that. No, obviously not. Right. So, it can keep you motivated and continue learning from them. And it helps you to see that these people started from somewhere and that they've achieved this by being brave or being, you know, putting themselves out there. And I'm sure that they had this imposter syndrome feeling throughout their career at different times. And when they just sat with that feeling and said, okay, I feel like this right now, that doesn't mean that I still can't achieve it just because I feel like this. Mm-hmm. You know, you can create thoughts to change that and move past it.
So we talked about writing down your accomplishments and how this could help. What do you think about the idea of writing down your mistakes or failures? I heard this advice and it sounds intriguing and helpful, but I haven't tried it because it just seems overwhelming and scary, you know, to put your failures on paper. But it probably means that I should give it a try. In fact, I will definitely try it and try it this month and then report back in our future episodes.
Oh, interesting. Okay. Yeah, I could see how this could be scary, to write down something that you didn't accomplish or that you think you failed at. I imagine if you write it down, though, you're facing what you're afraid of or what you feel badly about. Mm-hmm. That might make it feel less like a failure if you actually take the time to recognize it and be okay with it. It could just turn into something to learn from. They say that failures lead to growth, right? So imagine the most successful people you know or that you've heard about, and they all have a story of mistakes or failures, and then you can look at them now and say, whoa, you know, this person got to where they are but they failed many times along the way, and you know, whatever that failure looks like, let's say. But one of the best examples I can think of when it comes to this is just about any episode. If you listen to the podcast, How I Built This, we can link that in the show notes, How I Built This. Mm-hmm. Some of the most successful business owners in the world, people who have achieved incredible success in their fields, they talk about what they've had to overcome and about their mistakes and failures and, you know, just disasters in their business and imposter syndrome moments that they've overcome in their life or during their, you know, professional life or personal life. But they didn't let that stop them.
Yeah, it's so important to hear those examples. We'll definitely link to this podcast in our show notes as another source of inspiration and information.
Yeah.
So we hope that this has been useful and that now you don't feel like the only imposter in the room. We also hope that you decide to try some of the tips and habits that we shared. And if you do, please let us know. Send us an email or record a voice message and send it to us at hello@smarthabitsfortranslators.com. We'd love to hear from you. And we may even feature your message in our future episode.
Yes. So try out some of the habits that we talked about in today's episode. If you do want to try them, you could maybe start today by writing down some of the successes you've had this week. Make sure that if you are somebody who frequently gets this type of feeling of being an imposter, that you start to pay attention to when people compliment your work or when they, you know, give you some praise about what you do. And actually take that to heart. When people take the time to congratulate or encourage you, they're taking time out of their day to do that. And that may seem like a small thing, but you know, you can take that however you want. You can take it as a small thing or you can take it as something that really encourages you to keep going. Now it's time for one of our special segments. In case you missed our first episode when we explained these short and fun segments, here's what you can expect. At the end of each episode, we'll wrap up with one of three segments. What's on your desk, where we'll share an object or tool we have on our desk right now and why we find it helpful. Book Nook, where we'll discuss our latest reads, or another segment, which could be our Smart Habits Check-In, which I know that we're going to now be checking in on your habit that you're going to try, writing down your failures. Yes. I should try that too in a future episode. But today we will do the segment, What's on Your Desk, or What's on Our Desk, I suppose. So in this segment, we're each going to mention something that we currently use and love and why it helps us to maintain a smart habit or do our jobs better. So this week, what's on my desk is, let's see, I'm loving this new, well, it's new to me, stand for my laptop. When I'm working on my laptop, I always thought that these stands were just kind of like over the top. I don't really need these things. And it's one of those stands that you put underneath and it sits your laptop up higher and you use a wireless keyboard. Mm-hmm. So I first heard about this in an article that our colleague Emily Safran wrote for the American Translators Association publication, which is called The Chronicle. And she was talking about tips for passing ATA's certification exam. And the article caught my eye because it was a different type of article. It was about ergonomics. And so her tips were all related to ergonomics, which I thought was really, really interesting. And so I read this article and then I talked to her about it. And I said, tell me more about this computer, you know, laptop stand. And it's called the Roost stand. We can link to that too in the show notes. The Roost stand is, I think it's like the only product they sell, but I tell you what, after I started using it, I will say I let it sit in the box for a little while, but when I finally pulled it out and started using it and I hooked up my wireless keyboard, I realized that I wasn't holding as much tension in my shoulders. Mm-hmm. I'm somebody who sits when I'm working at a computer and my shoulders tend to rise.
Yeah.
I'm holding a lot of tension in my shoulders. And now I don't do that as much because now I have better alignment with this stand. So that's what's on my desk this week.
That sounds great. I may want to.
Yes, I'll send you the link too.
Yes, so. Thank you. Yeah, I remember this article. It's really great. We should link to that. So what I have on my desk this week is nothing, you know, crazy innovative, but also unusual for me. I've been working on a large project this week, but I needed quite a few dictionaries for this project. And I mostly use electronic dictionaries just because it's easier. to use on the computer, but I needed quite a few paper ones for this project, and I kept one on my desk, which is unusual because I usually try to keep my desk uncluttered and not have too much on it. But I found it so helpful this week that I've had it because it was a physical reminder of the fact that electronic dictionaries aren't always the best resource. Also gave me kind of a prompt to give my eyes a break from the screen. And it was interestingly also a reminder to allocate some time to read actual paper books that I enjoy more than electronic books or staring at the screen all day.
Yeah, that's true. Sometimes at the end of the day, I realize, wow, I've been looking at the screen for most of the day.
Yes. Yeah. When I switch to paper, I just notice how differently my eyes feel. Like it's just a strain on my eyes. So that was a thing that I really enjoyed having on my desk this week. And I think I'm going to make it a habit and maybe rotate dictionaries every week. So that's it for this week's episode. Join us again on October 17th when we'll share some smart habits for translators during conference season. And if you'd like to get notified when our episodes are released, sign up for our newsletter at smarthabitsfortranslators.com or subscribe to our podcast wherever you listen to it.
Talk to you then. We hope you enjoyed this episode and discovered a simple strategy that you can apply today at work or at home to help you achieve the lifestyle you desire. If you did, please let us know. We'd love to hear from you.
If you have a topic you want us to cover on this podcast, please record a quick voice message and email it to us at hello@smarthabitsfortranslators.com. If you like this episode, please leave us a rating wherever you listen to podcasts, and please share the podcast with other translators you know.